Welcome to Moments with Marianne. I'm so delighted we're spending this time here today. We have a very special guest coming right up, and her name is Sandra Joseph. So have you ever seen The Phantom of the Opera and just been moved by the beauty and the music and the performance? Well, we are so incredibly lucky today to have Sandra Joseph, who's here to talk to us about her new book, Unmasking What Matters, 10 Life Lessons from 10 Years on Broadway. Now, Sandra is a history-making Broadway star turned inspirational keynote speaker and author. And not only is her new book touching lives and making changes, but many of you remember her as she played Christine in The Phantom of the Opera for 10 years. With over 1,300 performances, she earned the record as the longest-running leading lady in the longest-running Broadway show of all time. Sandra's on a mission to empower others so that they can find their voice through their work. And as an author, speaker, and workshop facilitator, she's here to share with us today Unmasking What Matters. So let's welcome to the show Sandra.
Thanks, Marianne. I'm so happy to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, what an honor it is to have you here. My goodness. I mean, I'm just floored. You've got this just amazing background of having, you know, been Christine in Phantom of the Opera, and we get to spend this time with you.
Oh, well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, and even what's more compelling in some ways is your fabulous book that we're going to talk about here in a minute. But I know I'd be remiss if I didn't say I believe The Phantom of the Opera just celebrated its 30th anniversary on Broadway. Was that correct? Did I get that right?
Yes. Yes, it just had its 30th anniversary in New York. I was there with my husband for the big gala celebration, and my book came out the day before. So it was a very exciting and pretty surreal week. To have been a part of Phantom for 10 years and then to go back and watch the show, it was quite something. I sort of can't believe it still.
Well, and you played such a beautiful role. I mean, you were Christine in The Phantom of the Opera. I mean, there wasn't a Phantom of the Opera without you for so many years. I can remember, you know, seeing it and going, gosh, man, that's the most astounding thing I think I've ever seen.
It's quite a spectacle. And the show really holds such a special place for so many people. I've been really touched to learn about how that show has impacted people now that I've come out from behind the character and behind the curtain, and as a speaker, now I get to interact with people who've seen the show, and some people they've walked down the aisle to that music, or they have memories of seeing the show with a parent before their parent passed, and just these incredible touching stories of what that show has meant to people over its 30-year lifespan in this country. It's pretty amazing.
It really has touched so many people. And now you have a book, Unmasking What Matters, that really is kind of doing the same thing, where it's helping people, but just in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah, well, the book really uses Phantom as a background to share what has meant the most to me and what I learned from those 10 years of being a part of the show. And I'll tell you, you know, the number one thing that was so clear to me as I played Christine night after night for a decade, you know, more than 1,000 shows, was the moment that touches people the most deeply in that show is in the final scene when Christine, my character, is finally able to see the Phantom without his mask and offer him absolute unconditional love and acceptance. And I think the reason that strikes such a chord is because there's some part of all of us that feels, if you really saw all of who I am, if you really knew me, then you would recognize that I'm not worthy in some way of love or belonging. And so we know what it is to hide some part of ourselves, not a literal mask, but we have many ways that we mask ourselves to try to fit in or prove ourselves or be included or feel worthy. And that was certainly my experience. Here I was playing this scene every night where I am just pouring love into the phantom without his mask on, you know, looking right at the source of his shame and feeling nothing but absolute acceptance and love for him in that moment. But I would go home and I couldn't offer that same kindness and compassion toward myself. I was still, even at the height of my career, incredibly self-critical, hard on myself, feeling unworthy, undeserving. And the biggest lesson and the takeaway for me from that show was the importance of learning to see not only other people behind the mask, but to see ourselves, really the person in the mirror, and to recognize, you know, ultimately we don't need any of those masks because who we are at our core is absolutely worthy of love and belonging.
Mm-hmm. And it's so true. And your book brings to light such a profound statement and profound truth. And a lot of times people aren't even realizing that that's what's going on because we all are wearing the mask to be like, for the work we do or moms, you know, at like some kind of a mother's event or whatever the case is, like whenever we're out, a lot of times we do tend to wear these masks that really don't represent our true heart.
It's true. And I think even those of us who really are living authentically, it's not that we're intentionally faking in some way, mm-hmm. but the culture that we live in right now really does perpetuate the need to wear a mask, the feeling that we're not enough. We're constantly bombarded with the images of what our lives should look like, this unattainable, unrealistic ideal that keeps us all on the treadmill of improving ourselves, or we should be a certain size, or we should have a certain amount of money in the bank account. We should be doing what all the other moms are doing, you know, trying to measure up in some way. And of course, we all, with social media, we show our best face on Facebook. You know, we're not showing the dark moments when we feel like everybody but me has got it all together, you know. So one of my goals with this book really was to unmask myself and say, hey, look, even people who might seem like they're doing big spotlight things. You know, I had this platform from Phantom of, you know, being in front of thousands of people every night. But the truth of it was there's a whole another story going on behind the curtain, you know. The journey to really unmask myself and get to a place of self-love and self-acceptance, that came after I ended my Phantom career. And I think that's the journey that ultimately we're all on. It's getting to a place where we can really love and accept and appreciate who we are as we are right now.
Yeah. Well, and you touched on this a little bit. You talked about, you know, just kind of the start of your career. We haven't gone into that, but how did you feel when you first started to play Christine?
Oh my gosh, I was so excited and thrilled. It took me several auditions before I got a part in the show. I was cast as the understudy at first to Christine, and then several auditions later, finally got the chance to play this dream role. I was so excited and thrilled. I mean, I did six shows a week, but I would have done 10, you know. I loved it. I loved it. Yeah. I didn't even take a vacation. As theater performers, we get 2 weeks off a year, and this whole first year that I was playing the role, I never even took a vacation because I was just so happy doing it. I was on the national tour and traveling all across the country and finally earning a paycheck after having been broke and rejected for years in New York. You know, so it really was a fairy tale in the beginning.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about this a little bit, you know, before we, you know, hopped on here, and most people don't realize that you also suffered from stage fright, which, you know, you look at your performance, like, there's no way that, you know, that you would even have anything like that, because you're just, your presence was just so powerful.
Yeah, I had massive stage fright and just a lack of self-confidence all my life. And yet this burning love for musical theater, it was my first love and my passion. So I think we're sometimes given passions or dreams or certain aspirations so that we can grow the qualities we need to grow and the characteristics within ourselves to be able to step into that. And it was a real battle for me for many years to be able to step out and sing in front of people. I do not like being the center of attention in life. I'm a massive introvert. I have never really wanted the spotlight. Oddly enough, but I loved doing this one particular thing. And I studied privately and with a voice teacher starting at 16 and started to recognize I've got a bit of a voice here. And I studied acting and I just loved it. It's all about human behavior and what makes us tick. And so I loved the art form itself. And then I had to grow the inner strength to be able to do it at a high level out in front of people. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're up for criticism publicly. Now all of a sudden I'm traveling the country, starring in this incredibly popular show. And now it's someone's job to write a critique of me in a newspaper. How do I deal with that? Like, it's the stuff we all have to deal with in life, with being criticized, putting our ideas out there, putting ourselves out there. Anything that we're going for in life requires us walking through that vulnerability. And mine was just in this one particular lane, right? But
I think it was the whole highway that you took over.
Yeah. Yeah, but we're all on some highway, you know, we're all on some particular path personally that requires us to battle with our own insecurities or vulnerabilities and to take risks. And one of the things I hope that people get from my story is you are capable of doing things that might seem impossible for someone like you. That was the narrative for me. Was like, there, I love this thing, but there's no way I'm going to be able to do it because it's just not who I am. I don't like strangers looking at me. You know, when I was a kid, I was scared of strangers, hide behind my mom. And I ended up going into a field where thousands of strangers were looking at me every night. All eyes on me. It was like my worst nightmare in one sense. But of course, I learned to reframe that and look at it all very differently. But if I can go on to do those things, then we're all capable of far more than we might think we are in the beginning.
Well, and I love how your passion was just so much bigger than, and we all go through this. So, you know, the fear that you were experiencing, you know, especially with being an introvert, it's kind of like, gosh, you know, I have to be out there. And now you have not only do you have the spotlight on you, you have, you know, thousands of people every night, but it's your passion is what really, you know, brought you through all that.
It was. And, you know, I always say if you love something, even the tiniest bit more than you fear it, the love will always win in the end. It really was the love that kept inching me forward and kept having me say yes, even when my heart was pounding, even when I wanted to run the other direction. I kept walking forward, baby step by baby step, through the terror because of the love. And ultimately, when you push through the fear, I do think that the biggest rewards are on the other side of that. That was certainly the case for me.
Oh, you can tell that you really not only had a passion for that, but at some point, you know, there's that fun factor kind of came in a little bit.
Oh, for sure. And being a part of Phantom was a, you know, dream come true. And it changed my life in ways I never could have imagined, being able to travel the country, then having my Broadway debut and becoming the longest running leading lady on Broadway, then meeting my husband. I'm not sure you know about that, but I married the Phantom. I fell in love with one of my Phantom co-stars, and I've been married to the Phantom for 16 years now.
Oh, it sounds like the Phantom fell in love with Christine, you know.
It was the real thing, off the stage as well as on stage. Yeah. So, yeah.
Aww. Well, and during the time that you were, you know, performing on stage, what was some of your favorite moments of the show? I know you touched on one just with that love. Was there another moment that you just enjoyed during the performance?
Well, I always loved Music of the Night. It's the song the Phantom sings to Christine, because her job there really is just to be the embodiment of the feminine, really. She is receptive and open, and just he sings to her and she gets to just react, as opposed to when I would have to sing. And that's a different kind of embodying a moment. But I loved that the listening element, the practice really actively listening and being in that scene. That was always a really powerful one. And I also loved the scene where Christine goes to visit her father's grave and she sings Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again. It was always a very easy moment for me to connect with emotionally, because I had a wonderful father in my real life off stage, and to connect with that moment, all I had to do was to imagine the loss of my real father. And I did lose him the year after I left the show. He died suddenly of a heart attack. But I felt like every time he was in the audience when he saw the show, oh my gosh, I don't know how many times, dozens and dozens of times. And it felt like when I sang that song that we were the only two people in the theater. It was really a bonding moment for us. And when I sing it now, I feel him with me. You know, I still feel his presence there. So that was a really special moment in the show for me every night.
Having that really deep connection, and it really, you can see it play out on stage, and it's interesting to hear just some of the inspiration behind these different things, you know, these different parts of the show and where you drew your inspiration from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Well, and we're not going to cover your book, the entire book, Unmasking What Matters, because people need to go out and get their own copy. I love it. But I would love you to share with us a little bit about, in your book, you talk about mirroring love. So what is that and what does that mean?
Yeah, so I share a number of practices and tools in the book that have been really helpful to me personally in my own journey to learning to love my unmasked self and to have more courage and more self-confidence. And one of the things that, as I shared about before from the show, recognizing that I could, as the character of Christine, it was so easy to love the Phantom without his mask. And it's so easy, I think, for many of us in life to see the perceived flaws that in our friends or our children or our family members, people we really love, even our spouse, you know, to see the flaws and the what they might consider things that they really struggle with or hate about themselves, and to love them in spite of that and in some regards because of it, to really love the fullness of the human being before us. It's a lot easier to do that for someone else than it is to mirror that love back to ourselves. But we need it. We really do need to be on our own side. There are incredible benefits to our own well-being, our health, every single area of our lives, if we are able to use the power of our own loving heart toward ourselves, like a boomerang effect. So one of the practices I share in the book, and personally, I, you know, we all know we should be meditating, right, at this point. There's been enough research on that, that we know we should be meditating. And one of the things that really shifted my own meditation practice and made it actually a lot more fun was a practice of loving kindness meditation, where you offer your own loving wishes to the people in your life. But also an integral part of the practice is that you send those wishes for well-being toward yourself, that you include yourself in the practice. So anything we can do to engage our heart muscles, to engage the warm-hearted feeling of love and gratitude and wishing someone well, it helps to kind of give your heart a warm-up by thinking about someone you love and wishing them well. So this is something we could all do right now, that if it's appropriate to close your eyes and just imagine someone that you really care about, that you wish to be well. And think of this person. Just pick one person. It doesn't have to be a perfect relationship, but someone you really care about. And just imagine their good qualities. What are their positive qualities? What do you love about them? And then think about what you wish for them in their darkest moments. May you be well. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you feel the love that I have for you. And then once you've engaged your heart in that way, if you can imagine that person is holding up a mirror to you, a full-length mirror, so that now you're seeing yourself. Now you might feel a very strong shift from love to criticism. And isn't that interesting to note? So just noticing that, noticing what happens. But imagine that the love you've sent out and the well wishes you've sent out toward that other person are now being mirrored back to you, so that you can feel the power of your own loving heart, saying, may you be well, may you be happy, may you be peaceful. Mm. And when you're ready, opening your eyes. So just a simple little practice like that is a good jumping off point, because I think so many of us have the default of doing for others, appreciating others, seeing the flaws and loving them anyway in other people, but being incredibly critical and mean-spirited toward ourselves. So whatever we can do to start bringing our own loving and caring heart back towards ourselves, it's the beginning of healing some really negative patterns. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And I've been doing meditation and mindfulness practices for years, and I love how you have this framed, because, I mean, it's not just meditating on the person and and thinking about them, you're sending them well wishes, and then you're pivoting to ourselves, which it's, you're right. It's interesting because you can feel that angst a little bit, like, oh, I don't know if I want to, but, you know, I can give well wishes to me, but maybe I'm too heavy, or maybe I'm not pretty enough or smart enough or whatever the thing is, you know?
Yeah. Yes. One of the practices that has really changed my life comes from Dr. Rick Hansen, who's written many books, including Hardwiring Happiness. He's a neuroscience guy and a brilliant psychologist and a teacher whose work has meant a lot to me. And he talks about the importance of taking in the good. And he describes the negativity bias that has evolved in our brains so that we have been hardwired evolutionarily to pay more attention to the negative. Because if a lion is coming out of the woods, it's really important for our brains to remember to where that lion is living. And and in order to counteract the negativity bias in the brain, it's important to take in positive experiences and let them land so that those neurons that fire together, as they say, start to wire together so that we can actually begin to inhabit a different self. I mean, the neuroplasticity in the brain that's been discovered is really good news for all of us, because it is possible to absolutely begin to inhabit a different self and have a different relationship toward yourself. But how many of us were taught not to feel good about ourselves or take in anything good about ourselves? Because, you know, we might have been told, don't get too big for your britches, or don't be full of yourself, or get a big head. Or there's something very different from boastfulness as opposed to just a simple, healthy sense of self-appreciation and actually taking in. It's like I said in the beginning of that brief little visualization, think about the good qualities of the person you care about. Well, we should also be thinking about the good qualities of ourselves. Where do you try really hard in your life? And can you take in the good about that? Can you take in a sense of being at your heart a really good person? I mean, just the simplest things like that for some people are really the first time they've ever considered it. And it can even feel dangerous to some people to feel good about themselves, to take in the good about themselves. And the negativity bias will keep you in the path. Yeah, it really is scary for some of us to feel good about ourselves. But it's essential. It's essential to inhabiting who we're here to become.
Yeah, it's really interesting because a lot of us have been programmed from early that, you know, all these different limiting beliefs that in one way or another really inhibited us from being the true, you know, kind of rising to the person that we're meant to be. And it's interesting when, you know, we look at that and really question it. It's like, is that really true? You know, and is that even really a thing? And I love, again, I'm just going to be using this practice of yours for, you know, the loving kindness, because it just makes such a huge difference. And I could see the shift, and I could feel it.
Yeah. When loving kindness is one of the classic forms of meditation, and there are many different ways you can practice it. People can Google it and look up different ways. In the book, I share that my sort of take on it. I just from playing around with the practice myself, I've kind of come up with, here's what works for me and that really engages my heart. And I share the four phrases that are sort of my own version of the classic four phrases that loving kindness meditation invokes. But it really did shift my relationship to meditation. And there's a lot of research around loving kindness meditation as well by Barbara Fredrickson. She's done some brilliant, fascinating research on how loving kindness meditation actually improves so many factors of our well-being, including health. There are health markers that get better. Positive emotion increases. We end up feeling just a whole heck of a lot better. So it's a really good starting place, and it doesn't have to take a long time. And for people who might get bored by simple mindfulness of the breath meditation, loving kindness is more active. It's more contemplative. So it kind of gives the mind something to do, which can also be a nice doorway to ease you into meditation practice.
Yeah, at least it's they're able to kind of step into it and feel like, hey, I could do this. This works for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, what a great practice. I mean, that is worth its weight alone. You know, and the book, again, I just fell in love with your book, I'm Asking What Matters. So I'm going to ask, so when you made the decision to leave Broadway, how did you feel about all that? It must have been really tough.
Yeah, well, I knew in the latter years of being in Phantom that my time on Broadway was coming to an end, because I just felt that I had done everything, beyond everything I imagined. I mean, my dream came true times a thousand, and I just felt like I was complete with that experience, with that journey, and that something else was out there for me. And I really did not know what it would be for a really long time. But I was clear that I didn't want to keep pursuing what I had been doing. I just wanted to wrap it up in a beautiful bow with bows of gratitude and figure out what my second act was going to be. And it was hard. It was scary. There were a lot of false starts where I would sort of consider one path and start heading down it and hit a brick wall. And, you know, just nothing felt like a fit for a while. Mm-hmm. But in my heart of hearts, I knew that I wanted to do something with my other real passion, which had always been personal development and spiritual development, and really trying, you know, I kind of grew up in the Oprah generation of living your best life. And that journey was parallel to my pursuit of Broadway journey all those years. And I think it's the same journey. So we're all on. So many of us are trying to be the best version of ourselves and live our lives in a way that really matters, that is aligned with our values, and that lights us up and makes us feel like we're making our days count. So The journey for me began with, I saw an image of myself one night. I had kind of one of those download moments of recognizing that there was an opportunity for me to speak and share my story that I felt could help other people. And initially, I imagined speaking to high school kids who were interested in going into the arts, you know, something very related to my path. Mm-hmm. So I started there, but I very quickly started getting invitations to speak to businesses and the financial services community, places I never would have seen myself, never would have made the connection myself. But business people started hearing my story and saying, you know, this is the exact thing that we all face on our journey to stepping out there, to becoming more of who we want to be, going after our goals. So much of my story was applicable to them, because it was about perseverance and moving through rejection and failure and all of those things, being broke. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty compelling story of, it's really a bit of a Cinderella story, you know, pushing through struggle and eventually seeing this crazy wild dream come true. But what I really wanted to do with the book, and what I try to do in my whenever I speak on stage, is pull back the curtain, you know, to look behind the what's really true behind the fairy tale. And ultimately for me, it was not the highs that got me where I really wanted to go. It was the low points in my life that were the biggest awakenings. After I lost my father, after I left Phantom, the following year I had a tumor diagnosis that was a real health scare, and I'm grateful that I ended up being fine. But the moments that really bring you to your knees, that's where all the dust settles. It was for me, certainly, and where I got really clear about what really matters and how I want to spend the rest of the time that I have here.
I would agree with you. I mean, I look at my life, and what means more to me now is legacy. And it's mm-hmm. the same thing that you're talking about. It's like, what, you know, how do we leave this place better than when we showed up? You know, what can I do to leave it better and help people? And I've got to say, I mean, I can imagine there are millions of little girls and young men out there who are listening to this and reading your book and going, you know what, I'm going to persevere and follow my dreams too.
Oh, I certainly hope so. And also, you know, to recognize that your self-worth isn't in that thing that's out there. It's really in the everyday moments, in this moment of recognizing there's nothing that is separate from you, that there's nothing that you need to fix or change or improve about yourself in order to be good enough. You're already good enough. We're all worthy because we are here, because we were born, and we don't have to prove ourselves in the external world. So starting from that foundation of self-love and inherent self-worth, I think gives us a lot of freedom to then go out into the world and pursue the things we're passionate about, because we start from a baseline of knowing we're enough.
Yeah, even the things that scare you. It's like, I'm going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think so much of it is the journey between the age-old choice between love and fear. Mm-hmm. And the choice we make between those two extremes determines our path. So continuing to make choices from a place of love and walking in the direction of what you love, making choices that are coming from love instead of fear, I think that's how we find the next little stepping stone on the path.
Moving forward. And then how about gratitude? How has that played a portion in your life as well?
Yeah, well, again, with the negativity bias in the brain, it's really taking mm-hmm. in the good about life and having a gratitude practice. You know, it's something I've had for many years now. And when things are going badly, say I'm struggling with an illness or something in my life is not going well, or someone in my family is hurting or struggling in some way, you know, that's when I find it helpful to start an even more active gratitude practice. Like, I oftentimes will bookend my day with writing down a few things I'm grateful for in the beginning, you know, first thing in the morning and last thing before I go to bed, just to really take that in to my heart. It's incredibly powerful and helpful in shifting our perspective.
Having a practice like that would be, because it really puts you in a whole different mindset. So you start your day going, gosh, I'm so grateful this and this and this and this, you know, is happening, or these people are my life, or this situation showing up, as opposed to, you know, getting up and having everything kind of
not really go the way you'd want it.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes it's harder than others to find that space of gratitude when it seems like everything is falling apart. You know, we've all been there. But all we have is this moment and this day, and there's always something to focus on that is more good than bad, even if it's as simple as this breath. If there's enough air left in your body to breathe and you're able to simply be present with one breath, you can start there.
That is a very good thing to be grateful for. I mean, everyone has a bad hair day. Just be grateful you have hair.
You know? Right, exactly.
Expression, But I mean, it's just interesting when we choose to look at things, you know, and you talked about it earlier before and just how it, you know, our brain functions and things that can be changed in our brain based on what we're choosing to look at and how we're choosing to feel about certain things. It's really profound. And that's why I loved your book so much, Unmasking What Matters, because it really gets people in the right mindset to move forward in life, regardless what direction they're going in.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I do think it's important that we remember we have some agency. We do have a lot of choice about how we experience this life. And I'm someone who comes from a default setting of despair, really. A default setting.
A lot of us do.
Yeah, and a lot of self-loathing in my younger years. And really, if we look at our world right now, there's a lot of conflict. There's a lot to be sad about. And what is also true is that we can actually hardwire our brains to focus on what's good, to focus on what's positive about ourselves and the world, and to be happier. And when we're happier, we're more energized. And then we have more resources to engage with the problems of the world and start to really make a difference and solve them, as opposed to staying in despair where you just want to put the covers up over your head.
Yeah, for sure. And there is a lot, if you look for them, there's a lot of things to despair about. But at the same time, there's also a lot of things that we can do as a society to come together and move beyond some of this.
Absolutely. And I really tried in the book to share the things that have been really useful for me, and also the science behind them, the research that shows, okay, if we help ourselves in these small ways, you know, it really will make a difference. We really do have a lot of power over our experience and how we show up in the world.
Yeah. Well, and again, you've got the science behind it. So it really, you know, quantifies things for people who are looking. It's not just a bunch of fluffy words or taglines. It really is stuff that works, practices that work that have been proven. So it makes such a big difference when you look at it that way, you know?
That was really important to me. And this is my passion. You know, I'm forever reading articles and looking at the latest science about, I'm really geeky on neuroscience, especially like the neuroscience of well-being and how our brains can work better for us. And the research on meditation, mindfulness, all those things, exercise, so many things that we can do to improve our experience of life and live our best lives. It was important to me to include practices, tools, and research in addition to my own sharing my own personal experience to say, look, here's the latest of what's out there and how we can really unmask the best of who we're here to be.
I love it. I just love it. Well, and Sandra, so where can people connect with you and be part of your community? I mean, I'm signed up already now, but I'd love for you to share it with our listeners.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm easy to find. I'm at sandrajoseph.com, and I'm also on all the social media networks on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that good stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. And, of course, everyone wants to pick up their own copy of Unmasking What Matters. So, but thank you for being with us here today, Sandra.
Thank you so much, Marianne. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Sandra. It's been such a joy to spend this time with you and such an honor. Again, if you'd like to learn more about Sandra and her book, Unmasking What Matters, you can visit her website at sandrajoseph.com. Her book's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all major retailers. Well, we're at the end of our time today. I would like to thank everyone for tuning in. You've been listening to Moments with Marianne. And remember, make every moment count.
In a single moment, your life can change. Moments with Marianne is a transformative hour that covers an endless array of topics with the best of the best. Her guests are leaders in their fields, ranging from inspirational authors, top industry leaders, and business and spiritual entrepreneurs. Each guest is gifted and a true visionary, a recognized leader in her own work, and while teaching others to develop, refocus, and grow, Marianne will bring the best guest and sometimes a special surprise. Don't miss this. You never know just which moment will change your life forever. Moments with Marianne airs every Thursday, Friday, and Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Make sure to tune in and visit momentswithmarianne.com for more information.